We are in Champions League, man.
That was my
dilly din, dilly don, come on.
Into Sheringham, and Solskjaer has won it.
I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
This is the Modern Soccer Coach Podcast with Gary Kernin.
Aguero.
Hello, welcome to the Modern Soccer Coach Podcast. My name is Gary Kernin. Joining us today is Francisco Lorenzo, first team scout for AFC Bournemouth, data analyst based in Uruguay. Phenomenal perspective here, bringing the football and the data piece together. The art and the science of scouting and recruitment, plus the role of a data analyst at the professional level. If you enjoy, which I'm sure you will, please share this with your coaching colleagues. Please give it a quick review on the iTunes page. Would mean a lot. If you're interested more in analysis and support, please check out some options on Modern Soccer Coach, modernsoccercoach.com/analysis. We've got some new options available for coaches. Check them out. modernsoccercoach.com/analysis. Here is Fran. Enjoy. Fran, thanks so much for joining me today on the Modern Soccer Coach Podcast. Really, really excited to have you on.
Hi, Gary. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's a great pleasure.
The first question I have for you, we're seeing more clubs now that are becoming data-driven. It's almost the cool thing to say. And introducing more analysts, introducing more research, more data points, etc. What do you think that is the most important first step for an effective scouting program that's going to introduce and be data-driven?
Yeah, I think the first step in this type of scenarios is understanding the actual context of the club. What do we already have? For example, do we already have a performance analyst, data analyst? Do we have scouts? What do we have? Do we have an allocated budget to build from that and define the goals of the of that club, of that project? What do we aim for? Do we want a big structure? Do we want to, or defining the goals? Two, with those two, define the needs of that club. And when I say needs, I talk about staff, firstly. Do we need to hire analysts? Do we need to hire scientists again? And secondly, to define which data providers, software, or cloud service are we going to need, all based on, again, the goals of what we aim for and what we already have. I think that's the first step for a club to do in these kind of ideas.
Interesting. There does seem to be still that little bit of unknown aspect. Like you mentioned there, scientist or analyst. There is a difference between the two, right?
Yeah, actually, the data analyst is a bit more driven to communicating that that conclusions drawn from the data. And the data scientist is a bit more driven to building algorithms. Sometimes the structure of the data depends if you have another engineer or an architect. But yeah, the analyst is a bit closer to that communication part of it.
So you talked about there that the club having that infrastructure and that the context around it. How would you advise, coming at it from a different angle, how would you advise the coach who's a part of that infrastructure? How should they be aware, or what should they be aware of as it starts to build?
They have to be aware that data has not arrived to replace the subjective scouting. The eye test is just a complement. That if you know how to use it properly, it's going to give you some advantages. It's going to minimize the risk of evaluating players and teams. So basically, if you know how to use it, it's great. And if you're not, or you're not interested, in some point you're giving advantage to your rivals because they are already using it. And it's something that you're going to also battle. Is part of the evaluation of everything in football. So it's kind of giving advantage.
There's so much data now coming in, and especially even at the college level over here and youth level, you know, with different providers, they can provide 100 different data points for someone to look at, and it can be overwhelming almost for a coach without experience in that. Does a great data department, does that data, great data department, efficient data department, does that specialize in understanding every single metric, or does that specialize in taking a lot and making it into what they need and concise and almost removing some of the noise?
Yeah, it's pretty much as you say. The idea of this role is to take all the noise and present only the most important things. But in some way, the person that do this takes into consideration every metric. And what I mean with this, for example, you're gonna start to think of a player profile, a club's player profile. Like, what do we need to take into consideration, and what shouldn't we in one specific position, let's say center backs? And you understand that aerial duels, you have to weigh them more than crosses, for example. And maybe you decide that we shouldn't even present crosses or whatever, or passes in final third or whatever, when we're going to present that player. But you already took them into consideration. I mean, by doing that, you weigh them at zero in this case, and that is part of the evaluation. So I think at the starting point, you take every stat into consideration. It's good to know every stat into detail. That's great for it. Then some of them, you weigh them zero. You understand that it's not that important for this position, and then you stick to that club's player profile and you present that. But again, in some moments you already took them into consideration just once.
It's so interesting, because the more I look at it, and obviously I have experience in around data, there is a lot of subjectivity, not in the data itself, but how data is presented and what is chosen. That is because there's so many points, there is going to be a bias of what a data analyst will focus on. So it's not purely objective, right? There's always going to be an opinion somewhere from the analyst. How does a club, or how does an analyst department manage that, so it still creates almost this objective framework?
Yeah, the subjective part of it, I mean, data or the objective evaluation of players and teams, again, it's not here to replace the subjective scouting. It's here to complement it. So it definitely have to go together. And in this example, you use your subjectivity to define which stats to consider to a objective evaluation. So it's always a mixture of those. And I think that's the best way to do it, and how it should be done. You don't stick just to data or just to algorithms. You mix it with your mental subjective analysis, and that's how you would get the best of it.
And then being consistent with that too, right? You can't change every week on what data points you're going to go for.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I sometimes see that with because there's so much data, even the tactical data and physical data start to get overlapped with a player's performance. You're looking now at sprints, or if you can get access to physical data, and then you're adding on a layer of maybe XG assist for an attacking player or progressive passes. And then you start to put all that together, and then all of a sudden the coach sees that last week it was a different reference. I see that to be a tough space.
Yeah, definitely. For some coaches, it's not that easy to get used to data. Most of them, they come from being players. In their time, data didn't exist, actually. Mm-hmm. But the important thing about this is understanding the context of that data, understanding that not every game is the same. Not every venue is the same. A player can have big difference in one game to another. But with data, the bigger the size of the games or the data that you have, you minimize the margin of error. So yeah, if you go one game comparing to one game, you always find difference. But if you compare many games against many games, you will find the more reliable data, I think.
Let's say an analyst goes into one of those coaches that is a little bit skeptical of data and what it can do. How would you recommend that analyst, might be a young analyst that comes in at, you know, early 20s, that doesn't have a bank of experiences, what does that initial part look like for you, that what would build that relationship with the coaching staff?
Yeah, I think it's very important to keep it simple. Don't go that much into detail. Our job is to sum up the data and translate it into a football language and drawing conclusions out of it. I mean, you have to understand the point of view of that coach. He only wants conclusions. What that's the data tells you, tell me. Don't get me to explain everything. To coaches, focus on strength and weakness. That's the most important thing they want to know. Which are the strengths and the weakness of this team? How can we score? And what do we have to be careful for? That's the two main things that they want to know. So focus on those two. Don't explain everything into detail, especially the things that are average. Don't go into it. And get the best of your attention time, especially if you're a 20-year-old just starting. You won't have that many minutes per week, so get the best of them. Don't go into everything. Set up your priorities and start from the three biggest points and then maybe explain the other ones. Depends on the interest of the coach. And also, in some situations, you find yourself talking to players. And in this scenario, I would go a bit more with individual comments on their possible duels. For example, if it's a right back, you talk to him about the left wing he's going to face, which are, again, strength, weakness, if he's very fast on, very good on 1v1, if he has, he does very good wells, very good runs in behind, be careful for that, aerial duels, whatever, that, again, weakness and strength that could help that player to face those duels. And don't go with a lot of information, because that doesn't work. Go for one, two, top three things to comment maximum. And try to understand their point of view and what can actually help them.
Brilliant. Love that. In the US, with parents, I'm sure you understand that parents play a big role in youth soccer over here. And some coaches have a 24-hour or 48-hour rule that they have with the parents after a game. Don't communicate. Let the emotions drop down.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you think that an analyst should give the coach a bit of, I mean, if it's a bad game, should, you know, that part of managing the relationship, should the analyst wait, or is there any thought around the relationship aspect of that?
Yeah, I think this depends on every coach. One of the biggest difference of every performance analyst role is the coach. I mean, what does he like? What does he need? Does he want, some of them want information summarized, and some of them want a large report. Some of them want graphics, and some of them just text. So in this case, it's what the coach says. If he says, In my opinion, yeah, if it was a very bad game, at least wait one day at least. But if the coach says, send it to me right away, you just do what he says in this kind of situations.
What do you think are the mistakes? Like, what would you say do not do when you go into a professional environment as an analyst?
I think not having the right staff in the club to make the best from that data is, I don't know if the most common mistake, but one of the mistakes that they say, okay, let's hire, let's buy Opta, let's buy Skill Corner, let's buy Stats Bomb. But if you don't have the right staff, the right analyst, it's useless because you need their ability to analyze and communicate that properly to the coaching staff or coordinators. You need that. If you don't have that, it's useless. You could have the best data providers in the world, but without the necessary and the proper staff to communicate it, that's useless.
You mentioned that that's a really interesting aspect because we're seeing a growth now in the number of these third-party providers. Is there any concern over, are some more accurate than others? Are some better than others? Like, how do you assess as a coach, well, we should subscribe to that or we should get that there, you know?
Yeah, probably coaches don't know that much into detail of these things, but analysts, we do. We know which data providers are a bit more into detail. They have less errors, we would say. But they have another pros. Sometimes they have bigger coverage. They could have every league without the data being that good, or sometimes they are way cheaper. So you take everything into consideration. But yeah, there are some that you know that the data, the level of detail, let's say, it's a bit better.
Well, let's look at it from a hiring process. And you know, you've got someone who is young and who has all these background, all these diplomas and awards, and they're showing you a portfolio that's pretty impressive. And you don't know whether they're going to fit culturally in the organization. It's hard for any position really to understand that. What are some things in the hiring process that you think that organizations, clubs could look at to make sure that the analyst is going to fit there? Personality wise,
yeah, I think in these kind of roles you have to have a lot of teamwork and communication. Again, you have to, I mean, if you don't, you can understand the data very well, I mean, you can get everything out of it, but again, if you don't know how to communicate it, that's going to be hard to get some achievements, because you can know 10 out of 10, but if your communication level is 4 out of 10, they will think, or they will receive only 4 out of 10. They won't receive the full scale of your knowledge. And assessing to personality, yeah, I think like having different cultures in teams is good as well. For example, at the moment in Bournemouth, I'm the only South American. And yeah, I kind of fit, I think, in my personality. Of course, being sociable helps a lot. And the language, of course, if speaking the same language is mandatory, at least. So yeah, it's a bit of everything. It's a bit of everything, communicating, motivation, of course. And yeah, trying to build some teamwork there.
Hello coaches, we take a quick break here. If you're a coach who is looking for some options around data to either upskill yourself or get connected to an analyst who can potentially help your team, we have some new options currently available at modernsoccercoach.com/analysis. We also have a new online course coming very, very soon. New e-course, Tactical Analysis Alongside Elite Coaching Methodology. How to merge the world of qualitative and quantitative analysis with coaching, with the soccer aspect of it. Coming very soon, modernsoccercoach.com/analysis. Please check it out. Thank you.
Let's talk about scouting now. Obviously, the context of scouting in comparing different leagues has got to be really, really challenging. And I've thought about this here and looking at it and thinking, okay, well, you're going to compare someone in the Argentinian league or the Uruguayan league and try to get them to play in the European leagues, it's got to be tough. What's the toughest piece to transfer? Is it the athleticism? Is it the technical ability? Like, what do you find is the hardest part to see? Well, I don't know whether that could move or that'll go across.
Being the best league in the world, all three aspects of the player are mandatory. For Premier League, you have to have technical potential, physical potential, and mental. I say that tactical knowledge is inside mental aspect. But I wouldn't recommend a player that doesn't have any of those three, to be honest, because we're talking about the best league in the world. And again, being Premier League, physical demands are a bit higher. We know that. Everyone knows that. I would find hard recommending a center back that isn't 185, let's say, or something, or a goalkeeper that isn't 190. Is the league with the toughest standards in the physical aspects? So I think that's a bit of a difference between that league and, let's say, Spain, for example, that it's also a top league, but maybe the physical demands are not that high. And in addition to this entire evaluation of all the three aspects, and in addition to the third aspect of the mental profile, I also study their social profile, you know, like via interviews, looking at their social media, asking for reference, to also think about his adaptation to such a different culture, such a different country, such a different league. I mean, that's one big struggle that we have as scouts, and I think we need to consider. Some people say that's not part of our role, but I think our role is to minimize risk at every level, and having the social profile well known is going to help you to draw conclusions and make the final recommendations. Absolutely. I don't say you don't recommend a player because of his social profile at all, but you take it into consideration.
Yeah, very good. Very interesting. And obviously being careful about what you can talk about, what you can't talk about. When you're looking then at that mental piece and that subjective part and you're watching that player, what are some things that may point one direction or not for a fit or a high-level player that excels mentally?
I think his concentration level, his focus, that's a big thing that I consider. Is he on and off in the pitch, or is he consistent? Not only in that game, in many games, you can see his consistency. I like players that they play well, but they can sustain that level. I think those are two different things. We evaluate the potential of that player. I mean, how high can he get? And the second evaluation we do is how often can he get to that level, you know? Because you can have players with great potential, but not very often they get to that level. So that's one evaluation. And the other one is decision-making, I think. On the ball and out of possession as well. I really look into the decision-making, also under pressure decision-making, not only when they have big space. Some players, you see that they, under pressure, they solve situations like very quickly, very well, also progressively sometimes. So, yeah, those are many aspects. Also, in the defensive phase, the sacrifice, the pressing. Nowadays, again, especially in our league, the high pressing, the defensive compromise is something that you have to have. I mean, maybe if you're Messi, you can leave that aside. But if you're not, you have to help. It's very difficult for a team to really like a player if he doesn't show defensive compromise. Even if he's a striker or a winger, you have to show some defensive compromise.
This is fascinating. That the first bit you talked about the player's kind of consistency and the ability to maintain that, sustain that. I'm fascinated by that topic. That I listened to Rio Ferdinand and Roy Keane talk about the Manchester United culture, and they were a little bit more laid back, or they enjoyed the, you know, the nightlife or the social aspects. But when they got to Manchester United, the environment changed them. So when you're looking at a player, do you take the future culture into consideration, to where, like, oh well, if we got that player into this environment, it might be a little bit different? Or is that something that you just don't look at?
No. Definitely we take into consideration. And for example, if you have a player that he has a fame or a reference of being a party boy, and you think about which city is he going to, maybe if he's going to Miami or Rio de Janeiro or I don't know, you would find that he could go, you know, he could lose himself a bit. But at the same time, if you think of that plane going to Burnley or going to a city that he wouldn't have that much to do in the nightlife, you take that into consideration. It could be a positive thing or it could be a negative, like a negative thing that he doesn't like the city or whatever. But a positive thing could be that, okay, he has to focus on playing football and he wouldn't have that many distractions, you know? Like having many, many distractions near could be at least a bit tricky for some players, that if you take them out could be a bit helpful.
It's so interesting. What I thought of initially there when you started talking was it can go the other way, because we all think that, well, if we took this player and put them in a smaller city. But then I remember, you're too young to remember this, but 1995, Middlesbrough signed Janinho, Emerson, Branco. And first month of the season, in August, it was like, oh, this team is going to... And I don't think they got relegated that year. They might have got relegated 2 years ago, or someone will correct me on that there. But in 3 months later, Emerson didn't come back from international duty. So the player actually might need something a little bit bigger as well. There's that aspect too, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not something that happens every time. It could go either way, as you say. But yeah, signing three at the same time, it's also something to consider about.
Okay, moving along nicely. That aspect then of everything you talked about, I'm thinking when I'm listening to it, I'm thinking, well, that's something that you probably would see in person better than the video. Is that why we talked before recording about, you know, the trips that you take and when you're working at, is that why you take those trips to look at those things a little bit more detail?
Yes. Watching on the subject, on the eye test, on the subjective evaluation, of course, watching games by videos tells you a lot. But if you go live, in my case, I go to Buenos Aires and here in Uruguay, you can see a bit more about those mental aspects, especially. The technical attributes, you will see every on-ball event on the TV. You wouldn't miss that. Physical aspect, you would get most of them. Some runs, maybe you would lose. But the biggest difference is on the mental aspects. How does he react when a teammate loses the ball? How does he react when he's subbed off? How does he communicate with his teammates, with their opponents, with the referees? You could see that. How does he warm up? You could get earlier to the game and watch the warm-up, if he's compromised, if he doesn't care. I think that's the biggest difference of going live. And going live is when you're looking to sign a player, you definitely should go to watch him live. It's like the last part of your evaluation. After they check on every stage, watching them live to have a better conclusion is a good thing to do, I think.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of bad habits that have crept in recruitment with video, as much as it should help provide more information. The things that you talked about is, if you're just watching good clips or if you're just watching actions, then the two things that I see that a player didn't work, usually it's the mentality, where they can't adapt and suit to a culture or a style, or it's the physical, where, and both of those, you probably need to jump on a plane or go and see up close, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely those two are the biggest. You need to see them live. Yeah, physical aspects as well. They make a difference watching them live. Nowadays, you have data. If you do have data about it, I would definitely use the data as well. To be honest, I trust a bit more in the physical data than in my eye, going to this particular, or going to one example, for example, top speed. I could watch a player and say, oh, he has a great pace in open spaces. But if the data, for sure, it will confirm my evaluation, especially if I see that he has on the biggest percentile. But I would stick more to that data than to my eye test in this particular example. Or, for example, distance covered. It's impossible for a scout to see the distance cover of a player. You can have an idea if he was everywhere, if he in which areas of the pitch he had events or everything. But it's impossible to know, like, how much did he run in that game. So I would, and I use a lot of physical data in my evaluations as a complement. And I think it's a very good example, or actually it's a good starting point for evaluating, because when you go to on-ball event data that is more on the technical skills, there is more skepticism. But going to physical data is, I think it's a good starting point.
Interesting. Do you think there's any, with the style of the Premier League and the quality of the Premier League, is there any position in the Premier League, except goalkeeper, obviously, where a player with that doesn't have high-end speed can exist?
The flank positions is kind of mandatory. I mean, wingers, wing-backs and full-backs is almost mandatory again. You can think that maybe number six, a defensive midfielder or a center back, could not having that high pace or top speed, but they would need to complement that with excellent defensive positioning, like always being in the right place and excellent timing as well. If you do that, but yeah, again, going to the Premier League is physical demands are very high, but You still see some examples of players that they're not that quick and they do it okay. I mean, they complement it with good positioning and they could survive.
Brilliant, brilliant. All right, last phase of questions. Now, we'll talk about like learning about how to become a data analyst or teaching it. And obviously, you've got great experience in that area. You know, even listening to you, and you can tell that you've got obviously a passion for the game, but you can tell as well that you've watched, I would hesitate to guess, thousands and thousands of games. How do you learn, with the game moving so fast tactically and with data, how does a educational program, what should an educational program start to, because a lot of it is time. You've got to spend the time watching the games and learning stuff. What things should an online program or a course teach people?
I think the best thing of those courses should be put those students into a practical situations, actually doing practical real exercise, like evaluating team's game model or evaluating a player via video or via data and combining those. I think courses should aim for that, for giving the students practical practice, because that's the things they would face in near future if they achieve that. And the tools also, learning how to use the tools that analysts and scouts use on a daily basis. I think those would be the best improvements for them.
Yeah, that's kind of brings me along nicely. Like tactical systems, because that's a context that is, if they're playing with a team that's going to sit a little bit deeper, it is going to offset physical numbers, or it is going to offset maybe some situations tactically. How important is it that alongside a knowledge of Tableau or a knowledge of data science, that they're also understanding the game as well?
I think if you're the understanding of the game, if you were planning to be an analyst, it is important because your main task would be to communicate effectively the conclusions drawn from data to the coach and staff. So having that knowledge would definitely help you in that process. The actual challenge of this role is translating that information to them so they can see the value of it. So having that knowledge would help you a lot in this scenario. But if you're planning to be a data scientist or engineer, it will help, of course. It's always helpful. But maybe isn't that necessary, but because since probably you won't be responsible of presenting that information, so maybe you could be more of a having more experience on data and algorithms or whatever, and not having that much knowledge of football. But again, because you're not that close to communicating that data, if you're closer to communicating that data, or if your responsibilities are to present that, yeah, you should have that that knowledge. It would definitely help you.
Oh, Fran, I love that. As the closer you are to communicating data, the more you need to understand context of football and people around that there. That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think it that way, because it would help you communicating.
Yeah. I guess the area of data analysts, we don't know a lot about them, but we're seeing more data analysts, data scientists. Like, that's an area that I don't see as much, and is basically because clubs keep a lot secret. I mean, in your experience, how big are clubs going with data departments at the highest level? Are they going with 30, 40, 50? Like, what does that landscape look? I know you can't give me accurate numbers, but what does that landscape kind of look like?
Yeah, I don't know if a team has 30, 40, but yeah, definitely 5, 10, some of them 15. And again, depends on what are your goals. If you want to build an internal structure of the club, you would need staff. Some of them, they go for third parties provider, you know, and in that case, that's enough. You don't need that much stuff, maybe. But if you want to build a good internal structure, that I think is the best, especially for elite clubs, top clubs, they have to have their internal structure. For me, that's mandatory. Yeah, you would have to aim to have a every position. You will get to a point that you would find that you need a data engineer or a data scientist, for example. Because you were getting to talk with the analyst and he would say, okay, I can't go over this because there is an entire world, it's huge behind that data architecture, data connections with the APIs. It's very complex. I actually don't understand it on full. But isn't necessary? I mean, you don't have to know everything. I mean, you focus on what you like. Of course, you expand a bit your responsibilities because it would help you communicate with the other areas, but you don't have to know into detail everything that, for example, in this case, a data scientist does. You have to know how to communicate with him, how to work together, and that's it.
Where are we going with AI, Fran? What is AI going to remove in the next 5 years, in your opinion?
AI is quite impressive to everyone in our day-to-day task or in the webs, in the chats that you can see. At the moment in football, I'm not sure if how is the reach of it. I'm sure some clubs are definitely looking into it. The clubs that are more sticking to data, and they are a few steps ahead of the rest. I'm probably sure that they are starting to look on how it would help. They would definitely finding similar players or finding players that they would fit, and they would use AI to to load examples of players that were signed before and how they did perform. And I'm sure that they will find something that would be useful in some ways. Not sure how, but definitely it's gonna help in recruitment, in probably in opponent analysis as well. So it's going to be part of it. Yeah. Definitely in a few years will be part of it. And understanding that, of course, is going to be an advantage again.
It's going to be an advantage, to you said it earlier, to people who can deal with it and communicate it. But it also is going to add a layer of complexity around, again, in this industry, people will always go with what's hot and try and get there in the quickest way possible, which is normally with a chunk of cash to give something. But if what you're saying there is, if that information is going to increase, then you're going to need, that's how I feel. You're always going to need someone to manage the people and manage the numbers. And I can't see that ever going away. If anything, I see that growing, that you're going to need more experts in your club to help facilitate that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's gonna get more complex, of course, but hiring the right staff would help you. I mean, maybe at some point you say, okay, I have to hire someone that knows a lot about AI in this example, that you don't have it already, but you just find the proper person with a good communication skill, someone that would understand how to apply that and then translate it. And again, and the same with the new things that arrive, you just try to adapt your internal structure. If you need someone else, you hire him. This is in the best scenario, no? Sometimes you can't hire people every time you need someone. But going for the best scenario, yeah, you adapt, you hire, it's not something that is structured for many years, something that it will change, and it's a good thing that changes.
All right, last couple. Montevideo, we talked a little bit before we start recording about the culture and obviously Uruguay. Ranked number fifth in the city, is ranked fifth in talents that are playing at the highest level. So tell us why.
I get this question a lot when I travel around. I mean, why Uruguay? Why do you produce so many players? Being only a 3 million people country. Yeah, we're not that many.
I thought Uruguay was massive.
No, we're just 3 million.
Wow.
But the thing, I think that the secret or the reason for it is that football is a huge part of our culture. I would say it's the biggest thing of our culture. I mean, everyone or either plays football or likes to watch football, likes to comment about football. Like, football is quite big here. And again, if I have to choose one thing of our culture, I think it would be football. You would see that maybe on the technical side, we are average. We are some good players, but we are nothing way above average. Physical aspects, we are a bit strong, yes, but we are not particularly fast. Or maybe if we compare to African players, we're not even that strong. But I think our biggest difference is on the mental profiles. Mm-hmm. I think we have mental profiles way above average, definitely. I mean, you can get examples that doesn't relate. But if we generalize, we have very good mental profiles, big desire to compete. As I said, it's part of our culture. When you're 5 or 6 years old, they teach you how to compete. Like, we are a bit of fighters inside and outside the pitch. And you would have big compromise from a Uruguayan. Probably you would have big compromise because we feel it. We have it inside our way of being. And Montevideo, particularly, half of the population lives in Montevideo, and 90% of the teams in the first division are based in Montevideo. So that's why you will find Montevideo as a city in that ranking. But for example, there is a town called Salto that has a population of 200,000 people. And in 1987, both Luis Suarez and Edinson Cavani were born there. No, so it's a country thing. It's not just a city thing, but we are one special country in that point of view, definitely.
That's so interesting. Like, and you said it, it's a generalization, but I love the conversations, even though they're generalization, because it's kind of football philosophy. And I look back, and when I was learning, my first experience of learning the game was through World Cups, and Uruguay were always portrayed as the dark arts masters of the dark arts. And
someone you don't want to face.
No, I think it was 86. I think they kicked Scotland off or Denmark off in 86. And I think, but they always had a couple of really top, like Ruben Sosa. Do you remember him?
I was quite young, but I remember him.
Francescoli, Enzo Francescoli. Yeah. Wow.
Legend. Absolutely.
It's interesting that whenever you're, and again, we talked about Brazil, and I love the Brazilian, but it's probably why I love South American football, is because the Brazilian culture is more expressive. But the Argentina, I asked you before, like, is Argentina and Uruguay quite similar in that competitive streak? Because it seems to be presented that way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, culturally, we are very, very similar. I mean, only us could tell the difference. Mm. And then on the football aspect, I think we are quite similar. Yeah, definitely. They're a bit more technical, maybe, and a bit less competitive, but we are quite close. Our Argentinians, definitely, they have big passion for the sport. You would probably get a very big compromise from signing an Argentinian as well. We are quite similar. And again, yeah, we're different to Brazil in that way. Brazil on the technical level is way above us. And I talked this a lot with youth development in Flamengo, that they teach the kids a lot about the technical attributes and technical skills. But comparing here, we focus a bit more on the competitive side of it. I don't know which is best. Maybe the technical side of it, it's better, but it is how it is. And for us, it's been working quite well, so we shouldn't change that much or complain, at least.
The competitiveness, 25 years ago, that wasn't a difference maker. If you could sustain it and keep it going, you were just part of one of millions. But today, that has a little bit more value, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in the first steps of a football player's career, the desire to compete, it's going to be mandatory. I always ask for some youth development scouts. That is not the same as the scouting as I do. I go for players that are at least 16 year old, so they are in the final phase. And I find quite interesting and quite difficult to do that same evaluation with kids. I don't know, 10, 11 years old. The margin of error is way bigger. And I mean, how can you tell? And I ask them, because I find it interesting, what's the first thing you aim for? And the two main things, one thing that I got answered here in Uruguay is the desire to be there. That does he really wants to be there? And it makes sense, because if maybe he's very, very skilled, but he has to go to practice every day for 7 years without knowing if he's going to achieve, go into first division or not. Like, are you willing to do that effort or not? That's the first thing that they take into consideration here. Like, did he do a great effort coming here? Does he show interest? And that's, I think that's very interesting, and it's quite accurate, actually. And another thing they tell me a lot is their physical biotype. Is it said that way? The type of body, like you still, and I asked, but they're very young. But they told me, yeah, but there are some things you could, I mean, you learn, of course, but you could see if he's gonna be taller. You could see some things, for example, elasticity, their first touches, their technique level. that's a difficult thing to improve, actually. And if he doesn't have the right elasticity, he could improve, but the margin of improving is not that big. That, for example, upper body strength could be easily improved. But the same, top speed is not something that could be improved that easily. You could change minimum percentage of it. So a bit of those. I have those two answers, and I think they're quite interesting.
Last one for you. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of young analysts listening and being like, listen, I want to do what you do. What are some things that, you know, as well as the formal technical training and aspect, what are some things that you would advise a 20-year-old, a 25-year-old to start working on to get to your level?
Yeah, one thing that I think you should be done at the same time is adapting on the opportunities that are presented to you, because you never know. For example, my career started in Opta Sports 10 years ago. I didn't even know the existence of it. And when I found it, I understood that this was, I always wanted to work in football, my big passion, but 15 years ago, it wasn't that realistic, to be honest. So I didn't know where to start. Going to coaching courses and getting into that queue wouldn't be that clever, because not being a former player and everything. So I wasn't sure. And when the opportunity showed up, I understood the potential of it. A lot of things that I could learn from it and then advance and going to the clubs that I knew I wanted to work in clubs. So adapting to the opportunities that are presented, but at the same time, try to find what you like most inside football and aim in that direction. But it could be done at the same time. It's not that you have to choose one or two. You try to, because maybe you're not sure what is the really what you like inside football. I wasn't sure. I didn't know that all these roles, all this world of staff did exist. So you go adapting, learning with courses. I did some video analysis when I work in Opta. I did video analysis courses, scouting courses. I went to Birmingham for a few days to do a scouting course of the FA. Then I did a master in big data. You go building your own profile, you know, and then I got to start working in football clubs. But yeah, so, those courses could be in person or online. But again, trying to aim in the direction that you find most attractive to you, because it's where you're going to perform the best, you're going to enjoy the most. So it's probably the best case. But again, at the same time, adapt a bit. If you have a good opportunity in a role you're not that used to, consider it also. And another recommendation I have for the people that are going to enter in clubs is try to build reports to show your skills in a practical way. Because it's not the same sending a CV or saying, I'm very good evaluating players, I'm very good evaluating data or whatever, that showing a report, like saying, look, here you have an individual report of a player, like showing how you can do it and why do you think you're good at it. The same with a tournament. Build a report in a tournament and the same. Don't say, okay, I have a good coverage of South American football. I got this job. I got Bournemouth job building a report on the 20 Sudamericano. The South American under 20 tournament that is quite big here. I was unemployed. I said, I'm going to build a report on this to show everyone of my network how do I do work. I mean, on a practical way. Then they can compare that report with the scouts they send to that competition, and they have a very, very easy way to evaluate your work. Because if it's only by your CV or your cover letter, it's like you stay in the theory. If you go, I always recommend go to practical, build reports, take some notes, try to go for maybe one league and try to do the best positions of that league. You know, go to something practical to show you practically how you work and what are your skills.
I love that. I love that. Action tends to create reaction. The more you do, the more generates. And that's where, like, when I when I'm listening to you describe, do take a course, go to this, go to that. Well, that is building habits that are you're gonna look around.
Yeah,
opportunity.
Be proactive.
Yeah.
Be proactive. Also, LinkedIn, for example, I use a lot of LinkedIn to network, to create some meetings, to send these reports. Mm. So that's also a huge tool.
Brilliant. Fantastic, Fran. Wow, what an interview. Amazing. Thank you so much. Really enjoyed it.
No, thank you, Gary. It was, I enjoyed it very much as well.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Soccer Coach Podcast. For more coaching topics, sessions, and resources, head on over to Coach Kernin on Facebook or visit the website at www.modernsoccercoach.com.